Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producer is Lou Pellegrino. Three guests this week. Cassidy Hubberth, the ESPN studio host and sideline reporter. You see her work on the NBA as well as college football. She is coming into the studio. We really appreciate that. We had a very interesting conversation, including her revelations about being pursued by FS1 for their morning show. And you'll hear about that. We finish up with a roundtable with Jimmy Traina of Sports Illustrated and Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, where we discuss the Robert Lee story, which blew up last night. I'm taping this on Wednesday, August 23rd. That story blew up on August 22nd. And we have a roundtable discussion on what we all think of this, why it happened, and what ESPN does heading forward. So three guests. Cassidy Hubberth is the main guest of ESPN. And then we finish up with a 20-minute roundtable on Robert Lee with Jimmy Traina and Chad Finn, all coming up on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Today, we have an in-studio guest. That does not always happen, but Cassidy Hubberth, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, you got it right. A lot of people say Barth.
Has tracked into Midtown Manhattan to do the studio live. She, of course, works at ESPN as an on-air host and reporter, specializing in the NBA and college football. If you're an NBA or college football watcher, you have undoubtedly seen her on ESPN. Cassidy, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you.
All right, before we get into sort of your career arc and some questions about working in the business, I want to take advantage that you're here and talk about the Celtics-Cavs trade.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who listen to this will certainly know by the time they listen to it. Celtics traded Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, I'm going to blow this guy's first name, Ante Zizek? I'm sure I mangled that.
Zizic. You know what? I've heard it 50 different ways right now. So
really? It's a bad job by both of us.
Yeah. I'm the one who, you just did an intro specializing
in the NBA. I gave you so
NBA.
Much love. The more important thing, of course, is the Nets unprotected
there
pick.
You go.
Which could be the top pick in the draft, depending on what happens in 2018.
There we go.
And obviously the Celtics get back Kyrie Irving. All right, so you covered the NBA, which in my opinion is undoubtedly the most fun league to cover. The offseason is always insane, and this offseason in particular has been crazy. So as someone who covers the league, knowing that Kyrie was going to be traded, but not knowing where, when you saw this, we're taping this on a Wednesday, so this happened Tuesday night. When you saw the trade, what were your initial reactions?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, I didn't think he was going to get traded because even though I heard rumblings of this trade, of this really was the only trade that made sense if they get the pieces back and it's Isaiah,
star point guard back and other they
it's
have
the
other
only
athletes.
Thing that right. made sense. But I was like, is Danny Ainge gonna pull the trigger? And I knew it had to really the selling point was gonna be that pick, because Crowder and IT just that wasn't enough for Kyrie. If you're the Cavs, when you don't have to trade him, just because he says he wants to be traded,
could have played this year and try to work it out. And
Kobe Bryant Shaq situation
exactly.
So I didn't think it was going to happen, but obviously that pick, as you introed, is the biggest part of this trade because it secures the Cavs' future.
Right. Little protection against LeBron.
Secures
no,
a little
no protection
strong.
Really. If
it's
you lose
protection
him.
If right. you lose LeBron. Whereas now you also, like we heard reports, it's 100% chance that LeBron's leaving. This trade now gives you just like even a little bit of doubt. It's
I
helpful.
Agree.
A little bit of doubt that if you know he clicks with Isaiah, and then you also got Jeff Green. You got depth.
Right.
You have depth for this
3-point
casting.
Shooter and Crowder, which is
correct.
Which, you know, and
3-4 player. You can use he can be that defender, which you're not gonna have obviously with IT and Derrick Rose. You know, the Cavs should feel very good about this move because then it gets the whole Irving awkwardness out of that locker room, and there was some. You know, you've heard a lot of conversation about that they weren't friends.
Yeah.
Of course, they had respect for each other, but you know, there was some clear separation.
Right.
You know, growing apart. They're two grown men who feel like they're stars in this league. And as for Boston, you know, you have a great little core there. And if LeBron leaves and goes west, then the East is all the Celtics.
I agree.
So this was a rare,
sort of good for both teams, depending on if the Celtics' new group gels with
Correct.
Hayward,
right? And if Kyrie works under Brad Stevens, but I will tell you, Brad Stevens,
I would think
has
he's going to
so
get the best
much
out
respect
of him.
And yeah. Across the league. You know, but it's just a lot of new. It's a lot of new with the pieces, because Gordon Hayward and Kyrie, I mean, we don't know.
No idea. I mean, logic states that they should work well together, mm-hmm. given their skill sets, but you never know until they're on the court. I do think, I don't think it's cliche, though, I really think Brad Stevens arguably is the best coach in the league in terms of game planning, and he alone may be worth a couple wins.
Right. Well, like, how do you know when a coach is good? Okay, there's moments in games where you can really identify. I mean, there's really no better coach. I mean, maybe sometimes Doc Rivers, but the ATOs, you know, after timeout plays, I don't know how much you pay attention to basketball Twitter, but when basketball nerds start going crazy about, you know, Brad Stevens' ATOs, like that you don't hear that much. When people just get all geeked out about things like just coaching schemes, like Brad Stevens obviously, you know, does. So it's going to be exciting either way you look at it. You know, sure, the Warriors are still the team to beat, and I still think the Cavs are the best in the East because LeBron James is the best player in the world. But now you have serious contender with the Celtics. I still also think that the Wizards are going to be a hard out for anybody. And then you got the West, where Houston, I mean, what is this offseason?
Right.
Like, oh, Paul George with the Thunder. I mean, this is, the
Houston,
NBA.
Houston, San Antonio, Oklahoma
Correct.
City. You know, I mean, I have no idea what the Lakers are going to do, but they'll be interesting
regardless.
The Minnesota
Timberwolves.
Yeah, that's a good young core.
And even just the excitement around the Lakers. I mean, they're not going to, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but just the excitement of, you know, what is Lonzo going to do? So, you know, last year, everyone was like, "Oh, we already know it's going to be the Cavs and Warriors in the finals." And yeah, it was that. But you could argue and say that it was one of the best NBA regular seasons in quite some time, given what happened with Russ and what happened with James Harden, and the MVP race alone. So there was a lot of great storylines. Now we're heading into the season with significant storylines.
Yeah, more interesting this year to me.
Right, and then we haven't even played yet.
Yeah.
So, not to be, you know, such a fangirl of the NBA, but I am
You're
a
Adam
total,
Silvering it up. On
I'm
this podcast.
Yes, I am Mark Tatum, Adam Silver. I'm all everybody right now.
All right, well, let's switch into some questions, sort of about what you do. What is we'll take the NBA first, because that's more. You're working more remotely there than college football, or am I right?
No, you're right. You're right.
Okay, so usually you'll be on site more, even though you host. You'd be on site more in the NBA during the course of a year than college football.
Correct.
Okay, so what? What is the part you enjoy most about covering the NBA? And then what is the part that either you enjoy least or is the toughest part of covering the NBA?
Well, I mean, my role has significantly changed in the last year. I mean, for the first I just got out of the house, so to speak. I was a house cat for the first 6 years of my career at ESPN, and I covered the NBA as the host of NBA Tonight, NBA Coast to Coast, and all of our NBA specials, like free agency specials or trade deadline specials, out of Bristol, for not last year but the 3 years prior to that. And so I was mainly a studio host,
right.
And then this last year was my first full time the first time I was full-time on the road as a sideline reporter, because they were no longer doing NBA Tonight and NBA Coast to Coast or any NBA shows out of Bristol. They all moved to LA. So then I got moved to the sidelines, and it's been a big transition for me, because it is very different going from being a host and / entertainer to a reporter journalist, where your job is to complement the game, not really be seen or get in the way of the game action. It's like a symphony. You have to find a way to get in between moments of the conversation between the analyst and play-by-play person, and then make sure I hit the producer at the right time. So I'm learning a lot and on top of that, I got to learn how to make sure I know the PR people, the trainers, and that's a whole new world for me. I've done sidelines before, but when I've spent you know, 8-9 straight years in studio pretty much all year to go out full time reporting. It's been a steep learning curve, but that's pretty much the MO of my career up to this point.
You know, you recently re-signed with them, whenever they announced it, a couple months ago. I do want to ask, though, and maybe the answer is just totally no. Were you worried at all about being part of the layoffs? Only because there, I think, are a certain, there's really a finite number of people who probably would never have to worry. If you're Chris Fowler,
yeah,
you're not worrying. If you're Bob Lee, you're not worrying. If you're Kirk Herbstreit, you're not worrying. You know, Jay Billis, et cetera. But after that, you know, you can make the argument everybody else sort of has to think about it. So I'll just ask it direct. Were you worried at all? Did you contemplate it? Did you consider it?
Of course. I mean, how could you not be worried about it? Especially, you know, anyone who has followed my career, like I have been scratching and clawing,
right.
Even though I've been at ESPN for 7 years, it's really just this last year where I feel like I've been supported or recognized and respected internally as someone who has credibility. You know, I started as the ESPN 3 host.
Wow.
So I was hired as an independent contractor back in 2010. So before there was Watch ESPN, we launched ESPN 3, and we simulcasted college football games on ESPN 3. So instead of seeing Reese Davis at the time do halftime on ESPN, you would see me and Christian Fourier, and we would do a halftime show. And that was my job, okay?
Wow.
And so then I had my foot in the door, but to be able to climb up the ranks at ESPN was an arduous and difficult experience to try to gain respect from the executives who told me at certain times over the years, you're just a digital talent. So, you know, there was a lot of people who have now gone on to have great careers who started in digital, like, you know, Molly Kierum started in digital, had to pretty much leave and then come back. And now look at her. And then John Anik, he was with me as well as Paul Severino was at MLB Network. And we never got a chance. They wouldn't let us do Highlight Express or, you know, Sports Center because, you know, we were considered digital talent. But then I was given a lot of other opportunities. I just kept meeting with people. I had some advocates. It's just learning that place. I mean, I really started from the bottom of the basement. Some people would be like, well, at least you were in the building. Sometimes it's hard if you're in the building to just gain the respect if you weren't. I wasn't hired by the talent office. I was hired by the digital department.
Right.
So, you know, so then I went on to, I honestly forget what the original question was.
Well, here, I'll help you out here because how did you react when people would say that we see you as a digital town and
yeah.
that's sort of where we see your ceiling?
Well, that's, I mean, I took that as motivation because I was my career. I am a product of our industry changing and expanding horizontally, you know, into the digital world. My first job out of college was at a company in Chicago called Intersport. I was a production assistant, and we were creating content for Sprint mobile phones before the internet was readily available.
Were you an on-air talent there, or were you doing behind the scenes stuff?
I was a production assistant,
right.
And then they gave me some opportunities to do some reports, and I was able to create a demo reel, and I met Dave Revson, and I was introduced to my first agent, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
So that created some opportunity. But we were creating on-demand content on flip phones.
Wow.
It was the beginning of just this digital space exploding. I mean, it was the same year that Twitter really took off.
Right.
I was a freshman in college when Facebook launched. So I am a product of how much social media has influenced, what media is today. So it was unavoidable for me to not see its importance and engage in it. And I think it's really helped me along the way of being noticed and recognized, because so many people are looking at how to take advantage of it. And my real big break was when I worked at Fox Sports South in Atlanta, and I was hired as a digital media reporter, a social media reporter, where I, you know, was part of a show with David Pollack called SEC Gridiron Live, and Charles Davis was also on that show. And I would read tweets, or I would, you know, go off to different games, and I would, you know, sum up all the different reactions, take a little camera with me, and you know, just post those on Facebook, and just fan engagement. So much of my career has been about understanding how social media is growing, and how important it is to engage with fans.
What have you learned about, you sort of hit on this a little bit, but what have you learned about navigating ESPN in terms of career growth? What do you know now in 2017 that you didn't know in 2012, 2013?
Well, it's like I said before, I've always been on a steep learning curve, and I think that has helped me continue to get better and help my drive, because the moment you feel comfortable is the moment that you get dull. So I have pretty much hosted every show at ESPN outside of NFL Countdown and OTL and, you know, a couple of ride home shows. You know, there was one summer where, you know, they asked me to host Baseball Tonight. And anyone in that building will tell you that Baseball Tonight is one of the hardest shows to host.
Just because so much is going on.
Is going on. There's obviously, there's basically no rundown, and obviously no prompter. And then, you know, baseball in itself, it's so intricate. It's so, it's about circumstances and situations. And even the baseball world alone, it's a bit old school. And I will be the first one to admit that I'm a Cubs fan, and I lost my mind when they won the World Series, but I wouldn't say it's my number one sport. I believe it's a sport you really need to be dedicated to really be a true fan of. So I was very scared to host that show, but I wasn't scared enough that I was going to turn an opportunity like that down. And I will say, to this point, I feel like it's one of my greatest achievement so far, because I got a lot of great feedback. I bonded really well with our analysts and our producers, and they made me feel like I belonged, and be able to pull that off and, you know, fake it till you make it, so to speak, be prepared enough. I fully dove into, you know, everything I needed to do to host that show to the best of my abilities. And still to this day, I look back on that like, I was scared out of my mind to host that show, but I did it. I did it. And I think I did pretty well.
You may not want to delve too far into this, and I'll respect that. I'm going to ask it, though, anyway. And that's about interest elsewhere from ESPN. From what I understand, Fox, FS1 was interested in you in potentially doing something there. They certainly auditioned a lot of people for their new morning show. Was that something that you took seriously, and was that a potential job where you either A, were offered, or B, really considered moving to another network, which would be different, obviously, than ESPN, less visible, but potentially a bigger role at a bigger salary at a different network?
Yeah, it was an opportunity that was presented to me, and it was. You know, I know Chris Carter well from ESPN, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for him. And, you know, he had been telling people about his support of my career.
So he was advocating for you at his place?
Yes.
Okay.
And it got back to me. And I also have gotten to know Nick Wright here and there. And I didn't know about the opportunity until, you know, just recently. And it was something that I was thinking about, because to be considered for that position, which they are looking to be an equal partner. You know, I'm not taking anything away from a moderator position, which I have done. I've done hosted First Take, and it is one of the hardest jobs in this business. It 100% is, because it's hard to get in and out, put bows on things. Right. It's a
without generally speaking offering what your viewpoint is on the topic.
Correct.
Right.
So you know, for them to consider me an equal partner in this show that they're putting a lot of backing behind at Fox. You know, the morning slot is you know, a special slot in sports media.
Yeah. Because it potentially could lead to other things if you have interest in crossing over to, you know, what like GMA and Today do. So that's, you know, there's only a finite amount of those spots in a very competitive, very important television landscape.
Yeah. And I believe those two guys are incredibly thoughtful and very bright and intelligent guys who I think will be successful and have good chemistry. It was a huge role change for me.
Right.
And I'm not scared of being an opinionist. I've hosted His and Hers many times. I've done podcasts. You know, I'm not scared to give my opinion, but I just felt like I've been working really hard to find a moment in my career where I really feel like I'm doing exactly what I want to do. And the NBA has been my number one love since I was a kid. It was pretty much the reason why I got into sports broadcasting. And, you know, I may not want to be a sideline reporter for the rest of my life, but being in this space right now is exactly where I need to be. I feel like I've been a host, and nothing was going to get me off my game on an anchor desk covering the NBA, but I felt like I needed to get out and get some credibility, get to know these players, coaches, PR, agents, just to become a respected face and voice within our NBA coverage. And that's a role that I think is very necessary for me right now. And I feel, as we started this podcast, the NBA is in such a great place.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's just so much more we, ESPN, can dive into in our coverage, and something that, you know, I can provide, you know, being that I'm in touch with what's happening on basketball Twitter and social media. I mean, there's no better league that talks to what is going on in our pop culture and in just the celebrities and personalities. And it's just an exciting time to be a part of such a successful league. And it was hard for me to walk away from that.
Yeah, I can understand that. You mentioned social media. I want to ask you about this, because you're an interesting person in terms of this space. You're growing in not notoriety is not the right word, but growing in popularity with people who watch the NBA. So your social media presence gets larger. That's good in terms of exposure, but there's the negative, of course, of social media.
Yeah.
So as a relatively young woman in a very visible business, can you give people a sense of how often, when people are contacting you on social media, particularly on Twitter, how much of those tweets are related to your appearance or your gender or your race versus just, hey, what do you think of this trade that happened? Or, you know, what'd you think of John Wall's game last night?
Well, I actually think on Twitter, I have way less of appearance and my gender and more about engaging basketball talk. It happens to be on Instagram, where it's all about the visual.
Oh, that's interesting.
Where it becomes comments on, in the comments section about appearance or things that could be inappropriate. I don't think I get too much inappropriate comments on Twitter, which maybe I'm taking as, you know, people respect my opinion when it comes to
basketball.
The
NBA. Twitter is pretty. I feel like it's a large. Sort of, it's a large space to say, because, you know, it's a big group, and I would never claim everybody has the same opinion or the same type. No. But as a general rule, they're really into basketball. Correct. And less about the other stuff.
Right.
You agree?
I agree. Yeah. 100%. It's a form of entertainment in itself. You know, you're watching the game and watching basketball Twitter. I mean, when I was on NBA Tonight, I had to have my tweet deck open.
Right.
Because then I was doing a disservice to like the show and the viewers if I wasn't paying attention to what was most important to them. If they cared more about, you know, a Giannis block than they did, you know, a Mike Conley game winner.
Right.
Like, okay, well, we need to make sure that we give that as much attention.
Plus, the players are very active on social
very
media.
Active.
So, like, perfect example is, I think I'm right about this. You can confirm this. Literally right before the trade sort of was announced, didn't Dwayne Wade, like, tweet out eyes? Like, yeah, so, like, that whole league
Well,
is so...
I mean, it was like the report started rumbling,
okay,
tweeted
so
out eyes.
But
so
the point is, yes, all of those guys
are
like...
And they're commenting on it.
Yeah, they're so into their sport and the drama, which is amazing. That's so different than most other sports.
Well, here's the thing. We also get to know these personalities because
right.
there's less of them.
Right.
And so you feel like you know these guys because there's depth to their personality. And, you know, there's no other sport where these dudes can end up in your lap when you're watching,
right.
you know, and you get to know their facial expressions. You get to hear what they're saying because of just how the
proximity,
game is.
No helmets, etc.
Right. And then you get to know them outside because, like you said, they're engaged in social media and there's less of them. So you're paying attention to what they're doing. You're watching, you know, it matters that Carmelo Anthony's wearing a hoodie every time he plays pick up basketball. And then that turns into a whole big phenomenon. And then, you know, the NBA tweets out Kawhi smiling and everybody gets all geeked about it. I mean, the NBA ruled a Tuesday night in August with the pennant race going on and NFL preseason happening. Like, not to be a fangirl again, but Richard, like,
yeah,
it's pretty good.
It tells you. Although this is kind of an extraordinary trade,
right? Well, but
still,
this whole summer has been extraordinary.
Yeah, I agree. It's like one Chris Paul seismic thing after another. One last thing on Instagram. So has that has that forced you to change what you reveal, what you do? Well, I Carissa Thompson's been a guest on this podcast.
Yeah.
And we had a long discussion about this. She's very honest and really interesting
great.
To talk to. And one of the things that changed for her is when she got this extra job, her social media output changed because there was an expectation from the audience to reveal more on Instagram. So you would see her on vacations. You might see her in a bikini. You would see her in places that you almost never see a traditional sportscaster in terms of photos. So for you, I don't follow you on Instagram. I have no idea what the photos are.
That's so bogus, Richard. Why don't you follow me on Instagram?
I don't want to sell you like a fake.
I thought we were
lot.
Cool. I came all the way up to Midtown.
You tracked to Midtown
and
to do this.
You don't
might
even
be
follow
uptown
me on Instagram. That's okay.
Maybe my Instagram follow will not game change your popularity. But I wonder, like, because of the stuff that comes your way, have you had to change, or are you like, screw that, I'm not changing because other people
you always are thinking about it,
right?
You're always thinking about what you're posting. And because I was one of the youngest anchors hired at ESPN
right.
from the moment I started at ESPN when I was 26 years old, I didn't want to wear skirts because I didn't want to be looked at as the young girl, young anchor girl who, you know, was just hired because she's young. And I wanted to, and this was me thinking about looking at the older female anchors. I didn't want to give them any impressions. You're always calculated. You're always learning how you want to present yourself, especially since a lot of the feedback that you get is about your appearance
right.
from executives.
From executives.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, something that they notice. I didn't really like that dress. People, it's unavoidable. And it's visual.
These are male executives too.
Correct.
Saying that? Yeah. Lou, am I allowed to curse? It's really a fucked up business. I mean, in that sense. But it's the reality.
I agree, but it's the reality of the business.
Right.
So, you know.
Don't put the explicit tag on this, Lou. Sorry, go ahead, Cassidy.
You could say it's fucked up.
Now the explicit tag is there. I believe two curses equals explicit. Sorry, now we're down the rabbit hole. You might as well
You could
go.
Say it's fucked up, or you could realize that it's
reality.
The business.
Right.
It's the business, and you don't want to be distracted. You don't want to distract viewers. And, you know, like my first sidelines, let me give you an example. My first sidelines was not this past Christmas, the Christmas before, first NBA sidelines, which happened to also be Pop.
Oh, wow. Big game. And Christmas, too.
Christmas Day in Houston, Spurs, Rockets, okay?
Wow. That's big.
It's Christmas Day. No, I couldn't hire any hair and makeup. I'm a tomboy. I don't know how to do my own hair and makeup that well. Or I'm trying to learn for on camera. People don't know these like intricacies, but the lighting in arenas horrible. Okay, it just makes you look like you're dead. But I wasn't concerned about that because I was too worried about being popped and doing my first ever sideline. So I just threw some makeup on. I threw my hair back, and the majority of my tweets were like, Cassidy looks like she smoked 50 packs of cigarettes. What's going on with her?
Jeez.
And so...
do you remember the questions you gave him? I'd like to know that.
Okay, so then here's what happened. So I was real scared. And, I talked to my dad. I talked to my husband. I'm like, what do I do? I was actually given quite a gift no pun intended, because it was on Christmas Day. And I had him after one. And really, what I've learned, like, this first and third, these interviews are very tricky to do well, because these coaches don't obviously want to be there.
Right. And he really doesn't want to be
there. And he really doesn't want to be there. I sat in, we always have a pregame meeting.
Right.
And it was me, PJ Carlesimo was doing the game with me. Obviously, you know, PJ and Pop know each other well. Me and PJ have been working on NBA Tonight for years, so we're very close. So he did the introduction. And Pop... he basically, because he introduced me, and PJ was like, be nice to my girl. And Pop basically was like, you know, I hate these, right? Basically, there's only two good questions you can ask me in these first and third quarter interviews. It's what did you like and what do you want to improve on? That's all. That's all you can ask me. I go, okay. So I'm like, my head is racing. I have him after one. So nothing, you know, after one, it's like not a lot's going on. So really what I've learned over this last year and a half is really take into consideration the conversation you had with him pregame or leading up to a shoot around, unless like an injury happens or it's like a huge, like,
somebody's
first quarter.
Somebody's up big or down big, right.
And it was a close game. They were losing, though. So he was not happy, obviously, when he's losing. So he comes over, and I go, Pop, what do you want to improve on first quarter play? And I said it really fast because you could tell I was nervous. So, what do you want to improve on the first quarter play? And he goes, actually, give me an answer. He goes, pick and roll defense. Okay. It's not like, well, actually, I didn't really like our pick and roll defense. I hope we can, I expect LaMarcus Aldridge to get a little quicker there, blah, blah, blah. Lisa gave me an answer.
Right.
And I go, well, Pop, since it's Christmas, we thought we'd give you a gift, and I'm not going to ask you a second question.
It's funny.
So, but I thought of that because it was Christmas. It was like actually giving me a present because, you know, I didn't have to ask him a second question. But then he kind of smiled. So that was a moment. And then on the way back, because you usually talk to a coach during halftime, get some nuggets for your out of halftime report, and he was like, that was a good one. So I got him to smile a little bit. But then last year I got popped a couple times where he just gave me one word answers and didn't want to really talk to me. But
yeah, it's weird. Like with him, I go back and forth. I imagine Doris Burke does, and you might too on that. On the one hand, it's obviously theater and it's funny to watch at home when he sort of does this. On the other hand, it's incredibly, it's not, how do I sort of phrase this? He preaches professionalism, and what he's doing is the opposite of what he preaches. So to me, it's frustrating in that on the one hand, like the theater part of me is like, this is funny, he creates moments. On the other hand, and it's like the journalism part is like, dude, you're always preaching about professionalism. You want legit questions. You want people to respect you in the game. So when someone then asks you a question, you're not giving it back. So I don't know if you feel similarly, but that's how I always feel, is it's mixed. And on the one hand, it's like one part of my brain's like, this is kind of funny. But then the other hand,
it's funny when he makes it funny.
Yeah, but then like, on the other part, he's sort
of like, he'll
do it
with Jeff Van Gundy, or he'll do it with, you know, another coach if like PJ were to do it. But, you know, if he rolls his eyes at a sideline reporter after she, like when he walks away, like I know.
And the thing about him is he has proven time and time again that he cares about the right things.
100%.
He has essentially given Becky Hammon a shot at a real coaching job. Nobody else in the NBA has done that, including she may succeed him. So he's definitely a champion, I think, of gender rights. He speaks up when he disagrees with stuff that happens in the government. He's been very vocal about Trump, whether you like Trump or not. At least respect the guy that is. He's a sports person who knows he's going to get tagged if he says it. But then on this, he really is frustrating in that he just doesn't walk the walk. So it's
well, like I said, that is a hard enough moment as it is. There's no really good question to ask in first and third. To me, the moments...
Unless you're like dealing with like, I don't know, Doc Rivers, who's going to love it, who's going to answer to it.
Right. Like where Doris gave you an example when Austin Rivers was going off and, you know, she asked them about like the father-son thing. There's all... Those moments, but those are few and far between.
Right.
Or if there's like... even an injury. An injury, the coach is not knowing what's going on. It's the training staff that's going on. Or like there's only very few times where those questions are going to really impact your how you're viewing the game at that moment. It could, you know, help give you some insight, but ultimately it's a really hard moment to knock out of the park 100% of the time. So when you're just making it hard. I understand wanting good questions and wanting people and not wanting to sit there like, don't tell Pop like, hey, you guys are 75%, you know, shooting 34% from the floor, like rattling off like 0 for 10 from three. He doesn't want to hear that. And you have no business telling Greg Popovich his stats. He knows what the hell is going on.
Right.
But, you know, like if you notice, to me, the best way to do those is by listening to the broadcast. And what is the, like if they're talking about there was like a lineup change, you know, why wasn't Kawhi playing in third quarter? Like what stuff like that. To me, like that's really important to make sure that you're observing and then asking about. But it's a hard enough job it is as it is, and he's and we're like the lowest people on the totem pole, and he's picking on us. But I want it to be differently. But I think this is the only thing he has to protest against these interviews that he just doesn't want to do, and he's been protesting it for long before I even got involved.
Which crew are you usually with? Are you with the Hubie crew, or it's
so
a mix?
So the NBA, we change crews all the time. So aside from the playoffs, we have set crews.
Right.
So this playoffs, I was with Doris Burke, GOAT, and Ryan Rucco.
Oh, nice.
Who's has been a dear friend of me.
Yeah, Rucco's a good dude.
He's amazing. And, you know, we're both young in this business, and he's such a pro. And, you know, the two of them really helped me, you know, learn a lot this year. But I did a lot of games with Doug Collins and Ryan Rucco. Huh. I did games with every crew.
Right.
I worked with Mark. I worked with Breen.
You work with Hubie at all?
Yes, I worked with Hubie. And I mean, the night before dinners that we would have, I'm just sitting there and listening to the stories the just lifetime of stories he has. It's
Cassidy,
a treasure.
Here's what we're going to say.
Yeah.
It's artist Gilmore, 19. No,
he's exactly.
Hubie is my only great Hubie Brown connection is Hubie Brown's first ever podcast was this podcast.
What?
He'd never done one before.
Oh my God.
I really like did a lot of research. He was really, I think, impressed by the fact that I took the time to like really read up.
He appreciates hard work.
He appreciates hard work
and making sure that you're passionate about.
For you, I did actually go that deep where I read the piece that you did for Allure as well as your video.
Oh my
video,
God, no,
but I'm not going to bring that up.
Please don't.
I don't really have a question on it. But I do want you to know that I did do the research at least there. I want to ask you about sideline reporting because, again, I think you can provide some insight. For you, it has certainly been an excellent opportunity to get more exposure, to get, I would imagine, more connections within your company, to let the executives there sort of see you in a high-profile role.
Mm-hmm.
The question, though, that always comes up, of course, is the sideline reporter position, in your opinion, a good opportunity for women, or do you think it ultimately reinforces that women are not getting other positions on a sports broadcast? Now, that's changing a little bit at ESPN, thankfully. Doris is one. Beth Mowins is about to do the NFL. Kara Lawson's done a lot in the NBA. So your network is honestly the one network, thankfully.
And our league. I mean, the NBA
and itself. And the NBA, yeah.
You've kind of been like the
old bullshit canard that certain roles have to be filled by certain archetypes is kind of being blown up, which is good. But as a general rule, when you eliminate ESPN, and let's give CBS at least a little credit for putting Beth on an NFL game, and Debbie Antonelli did the men's tournament this year. Generally, it's just ESPN doing this and no one else. So the sideline reporter position is still predominantly a woman, generally speaking, younger than older. And for the most part, at least at the highest levels, the entree into the business as well as the host position, and that's it. Those are the moderator position, usually between men, and then the sideline reporter position on a crew, usually called by men. So do you have any thoughts in terms of whether that you know, whether that opportunity ultimately is good, or does it reinforce some kind of stereotype that women aren't doing these other positions?
No, because I feel like I represent that I've done more than just sidelines, and that they're giving – let me start from what I know. What I know within ESPN, on the NBA, you have Michelle Beadle on the countdown desk, Rachel Nichols hosting our daily NBA show.
Right.
Doris Burke, arguably our best basketball analyst, you know, not just NBA, basketball analyst, also our top sideline reporter. I mean, some may argue across all sports.
Definitely.
And then, you know, I'm getting an opportunity to do sidelines after doing hosting for the majority of my career at ESPN. And then you have people like Kara Lawson, who's doing analyst work on the radio and possibly doing more on television. So it's hard when I'm seeing these opportunities and I'm seeing the lines blurred for our roles. Do we need more opportunity? Yes. But when I see people who, you know, I am colleagues with, like Sarah Spain being an opinionist, or Jamel being an opinionist, where their opinions matter and they make waves, and you know, Jessica Mendoza in the highest seat in what I told you about in baseball, which is, some may argue, the boys club of all boys club.
Right.
And, you know, so when I see that support, it starts with, you know, the people in charge giving us opportunity. So I cannot, with those examples, how can I deny that we're not getting opportunity? You know, I think there should be, women should have more, you know, play-by-play and analyst roles, but I think ESPN is doing such a good job in showing, leading by example, really honoring hard work and talent.
Yeah, I mean, there's no one close in the business in terms of what you're doing. There are pockets at other places. Rebecca Lowe has got a very high-profile job at NBC, and you know, you've seen like Mary Carrillo's done men's tennis as well as women's tennis, but consistently, ESPN is the leader in this, and they have backed up the talk with literally assigning people to those positions.
And then if you want to criticize the sideline reporting job, it's a huge role. Yes, I'm talking about the first and third quarter interviews are tough to do well, but as far as a significant moment within a game that a broadcaster can do, there's no bigger moment than the post-game interview. That is a big moment. Any from a regular
look at
season.
Doris with the Warriors. It was like
correct.
A clinic.
Yeah. But even just one of the highlights of my past year was being able to interview Russell Westbrook after, you know, he tied Oscar Robertson on his home court, and the whole crowd screaming MVP. And I had a moment where, you know, I had to make sure that I grabbed him when he was feeling this euphoria. And it was, to me, you don't really see to that point, you didn't see Russell celebrate himself that way.
Right.
And to be a part of that moment, it was like, that's when it hit me. I was like, wow, like this is something special that I was fortunate to be a part of. And that those are those moments that, you know, sure, okay, I may not get my five reports in, okay? I may only be seen first, third, and post game. But if the post game is something where you get a comment from an athlete, or like a moment of celebration, or even just a moment of sadness, then, you know, that is something you can't forget. And so I think the sideline reporter role is huge, and doesn't matter male or female. I mean, Chris Broussard had one of the biggest moments In recent memory, as far as like a post game show, when he asked Paul Pierce, you call bank, and he said, I call game. Like, everyone's going to remember that moment. So it doesn't matter, male, female, whatever. It's about like finding that connection and making sure that the athlete feels comfortable to be themselves in that moment. So,
right. And one of the things you didn't even mention, which if, I mean, you know, this given obviously how many games you've worked, and, I know this just having traveled, with a number of broadcast crews, you never honestly know how much work the sideline reporter does because they're so often giving stuff to the producer and the broadcast crew. Mm-hmm. If the broadcast crew is good, they'll let the people know that the sideline reporter got this. But you're reporting, you know, maybe 20, 15, 10% of it ever makes air. But you provided so much for them that actually helps to broadcast right. That the viewer never really knows.
Well, yeah. And like I mentioned before, it's an orchestra. It's a dance. It's like there was a playoff game where I think it was Bucks Raptors, where everything was hitting. Like I was hitting the producer at the right time where it was a free throw and I could get a report in about Thon Maker. And it just so happens the next play, Thon Maker has a huge block. So it all came together. And the very next playoff game I had, I kept hitting him and said, we can't fit you in, because there was a bunch of fights. I don't know if you remember. It was a Washington game. There was a big fight, and then it just got out of hand. It was a lot of chippiness, and there was no room for me.
Right.
You know, even if I had a report, just it wasn't for the betterment of the broadcast for me to get in there with some random, you know, story. It just so happens all my stories in the Raptors Bucks game just played into how the game was playing out. And so you have to be listening to the broadcast and making sure your timing is right. And sometimes it just doesn't work out. It happens in sports as well.
All right, two more topics I want to hit on. You did Battle of the Network Stars this year. And that's interesting to me. I mean, you get this kind of opportunity. Let's be blunt. You have to take it. I'm sure the money is ridiculous for the amount of reps that you did. No offense to Tessa Torre and Greenberg. But how do you weigh that kind of assignment, though? Because that's interesting to me. Like, you get presented this thing that's not what you do every day. It potentially could be seen by a ton of people.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, on this case, it's sort of still related to sports. At the same time, you know, you don't want to take a project where it really gets like criticized and it sort of devalues your reporting or journalism. So could you just take me through your thought process so you get this offer. I don't know if you had to audition or try out. And then what's your thought process in terms of doing it?
Well, I developed a good relationship with Rob Mills over the years and just kept in contact. And that was through my agent, Evan Dick, who has, you know, reach into the non-scripted
world,
right. Which, you know, is a benefit of being a part of CAA, because there's a lot of reach there. So there's been talk about different shows over the years, you know, talked about like BattleBots and these.
I should know who does that. Molly, is that Molly?
No, it's actually Sam Ponder.
Sam Ponder does BattleBots. Okay.
Molly McGrath did the first year.
And then, Christine Leahy does one of these shows.
American Ninja Warrior.
Right, okay. So there are these non-scripted opportunities.
Opportunities where you see a lot of, sports media people taking these positions because they want people who know how to handle sideline reporting duties, because that's what they want. They want reaction from these athletes lack thereof, which was the case of Battle of Network.
But they're
Stars.
Doing athletic competition.
Correct. Right. And so when you asked me, like, was I hesitant about that? No, because I saw how much people loved the original Battle of Network Stars, and I understood it was a competition. And on top of that, when I have, you know, coworkers like Mike Greenberg, Joe Tessitore, and Carrie Champion all part of this broadcast, it also made me feel confident that this is a great opportunity to be a part of, and not something that's going to hurt my credibility.
Right.
It was backed by ABC, which is owned by Disney, which we're all under the umbrella of. So I never thought that was going to be the case. I just thought it was a great opportunity to do something in a world that I, you know, knew nothing about. And to be with coworkers and getting the back of Connor Schell to be able to do that. I mean, it was during the NBA finals. Like, I was asked to do some digital media, social media stuff around the NBA finals. So of course that, you know, there were some opportunities for me to do some stuff going on with that, but I was given the okay that I could, you know, buy Connor, that I could do take this opportunity. So, I mean, it was incredible.
How long was it? It was 2 weeks in California.
Malibu, California. Nice. Do you feel bad for me?
No. Every day? Do you shoot every day?
Every day. They were long days. Right. You know, we had to get there at 6 o'clock and then we left around 6 p.m. So, they went by so fast. But it was the challenging thing was it was 10 new celebrities, challenging in air quotes, 10 new celebrities every single day.
Right.
And so sometimes we didn't know if, you know, the lineup into the morning of, because let's be honest, like celebrities, they're flaky. And right. So to talk about crash course on learning these people's stories, because really there was no IFB situation. It was a free for all, like just making sure you just grab as much content as possible. So me and Carrie were just running around, like talking to Lou Ferrigno, having them tell his story about bodybuilding.
And then the producers will figure out how to use it.
Correct. And just piece it all together. But, you know, we needed to make sure that actually it helped my reporting skills because, you know, it's having to cram and to like really try to dig deep into, you know, when you're talking about celebrities and you're talking about like network shows, they wanted to get storylines. They wanted to have these people open up so the viewers can relate to them and cheer for them during the obstacle course. So I've, you know, as I'm continuing to hone my reporting skills, I found it to be an incredibly helpful experience, not to mention really freaking fun.
Did they give you any indication as to what is happening heading forward?
Not yet.
So the show still can potentially be re-upped, I guess, for next summer.
Right. Okay. And there's still a couple episodes left. Yeah.
Oh, we haven't. So it's exciting.
I'll
tune in.
We got to figure out what
is going on.
Yeah, like Vivica A. Fox coming up.
Was there any good? Was there anybody who's a really good athlete that just surprised you? Like, wow, this person's pretty good. That's a no already.
Okay.
All right.
Well, Ronda Rousey, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Well, did she compete or was she?
No, but she was the most impressive person.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's a former Olympian and
I'm not talking
MMA
about
champ.
That. I'm talking about she was with us every single day. Okay.
Well, she wants to get into this world.
I know, but okay.
I like Rousey. She seems pretty cool.
Her ability to... And I asked her, did she ever want to coach? Just because she had a new team.
That was her job. She was the coach or the motivator. I got
and
you.
She was so invested. And granted, she was being paid to be invested.
But
she's a big star. She was so invested. There was a moment with her and Kim Fields, Tootie, where like Tootie like fell down during the obstacle course. And, you know, she lost the obstacle course. And they had this real moment. And Tootie was crying. Kim Fields was crying. Mm-hmm. And Ronda had this real moment. It was like, you think I don't know what it is to lose? I know what it is to lose, but you just got to get up and keep fighting. Like it sounds like you cue the violins right now, but it was.
I could feel
it was a real moment. And not to mention, she is such a badass. Every single day after shooting, she would run up these sand dunes in Malibu, and I did it with her once.
Nice.
And that my lungs almost like.
Hey, you got to train with Ronda Rousey though.
That bragging rights for life.
Good story to tell.
100%. So she was so impressive, just how into it she was, and you could tell if you do watch, you know, every episode that she really is the star of the show because, you know, she's created TV gold like every single day.
It's a good story for you to tell back in Northwestern. You have a one up over Greenberg or Wilbon or Rovell or whoever.
Yeah, I tried to get Rachel. Those guys to come. Nobody wanted to do it. So,
all right, here's the last one. As you look at your career, I mean, again, you're really at the beginning of your career. You look at sort of in terms of the long term, have you thought about ultimately where you hope to go? And like, is there some kind of long-term goal for you, whether it's at ESPN or elsewhere? I mean, you know, you have a very good job now. And if you're interested in hosting, you obviously can do that for the next 20-plus years. That job doesn't go away. And I think the sideline actually has even proven, whether it's Salters or Tafoya or Doris, or Pam Oliver, age is sort of like getting thankfully sort of pushed forward in that space. So if these are interesting jobs to you, you have a lot of options to
definitely
for a long-term. What is your... And again, it's a long way away, but when you think about sort of where you want to go in the next 5 to 10 years, where do you want to go?
And I said I don't want to do sidelines for the rest of my life earlier, just because I feel like with 1 year under my belt of full-time sidelines and, you know, the last 10 years doing hosting, I say because I feel very comfortable hosting. And so I just feel like a pull back to the hosting anchor role. But right now, I'm exactly where I need to be, because I do feel like, you know, before last year, I was no different than my father watching on, you know, his couch. About when it came to
I thought you were going to say he's talking to Greg Popovich as well.
Commenting like, and awesome. Talking about the NBA, because I didn't have any, you know, actual conversations with players and coaches and on a daily basis and really getting ingrained in that world. And so right now I need to be doing that while also at the same time, you know, exploring how to take advantage of the entertainment part of the league. So, and that's how I view hosting and anchoring the NBA. It's about tapping into how can you connect with viewers so they choose to watch your coverage of the league when they really could just watch basketball Twitter and, you know, formulate their own type of aggregate their own type of voice they want to hear from on a night-to-night basis. So, you know, but I find that interesting. I find that compelling to really tap into that and really explore. Like I the majority of my early career, I had a lot of production background. Ultimately, I mean, if later on in my career I go behind the cameras, I'd be more than happy with that. I love producing. I love being part of the creative side, and really, really tapping into how can we make our viewership better? How can we get the best out of our analysts and anchors? Like, that's part of the reason why I really liked anchoring, because I would be given a different analyst every single night on NBA Tonight. And it was like it was a fun challenge for me to get the best out of, you know, Antonio Davis. So me and him had the best time on highlights or with legs. I would just get out of the way and he would teach me. There's no one on this earth who teaches me more about basketball than Tim Legler. Or like PJ Carlesimo. I just let him be the lovable, you know, curmudgeon that he is. You know, just finding ways to like, to get the best out of people. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that aspect of being a host. So as far as what I want to continue to do, I love being part of two of the biggest, projects that ESPN has in the college football and the NBA. It could be argued that what I do on College Football Saturdays is the biggest thing that I do. I do cut-ins on ABC all day long, and then I do the post-game show after the primetime game by myself. It's 5 minutes of me just ripping. I've had NFL coaches tell me that segment that I do after the primetime game, which
It's
a huge audience, and it's just, it goes back to the old, like, if you can't sit and watch college football all day, I rip through 5 minutes of the whole day in college football without breathing, basically. and, you know, I get a lot of feedback from that, and I feel very proud to be a part of our college football coverage in that regard. And the viewership is huge. And, you know, I started my career at ESPN doing college football, and I've been able to stay with it for the last, you know, 7 years. So being a part of those two, you know, projects at ESPN, I do feel like this year, as I mentioned to you, after signing that contract, is the first year I feel appreciated. And I feel like I am someone that, you know, is being invested in, and I feel the support. And, you know, it's been a long journey, and some may look at me and be like, it's been a pretty fortunate journey, and I will not argue with them. But I you know, I've gone through, you know, a lot of sacrifices, as everyone in this business has. And I know a lot of young people listen to your podcast and are wondering what does it take to get in this business. And I will tell you, it takes that I've been with my husband for 12 years. This is the first year I've ever lived with him. I've you know, up until this year, it's about missing holidays, Christmas. I haven't, you know, spent Christmas with my family in 5 years. You know, it's about working odd hours. When I was on NBA Tonight, we went on at 1:30, 2 a.m. I would go to sleep at 6 a.m. and I would, you know, wake up at 4, and then, I don't know, 6 a.m. to like 1, and then I would, you know, get ready to do it all over again. It's about the fact that my first year out of school, I worked from 5 a.m. until 5 p.m. working two different jobs. And, you know, second year after that, commuting from Atlanta to Chicago. Like, this, it's been... but I wouldn't trade it for the world, because I feel like I've earned it. I was a non-traditional route. I didn't, you know, I chose, as we talked about earlier, when I forgot the question you were talking about, like how much digital media, you know, has helped me. Like I chose right out of college to, you know, not to be on a small screen everywhere as opposed to being on a, you know, big screen somewhere. Right. And it was about me understanding what was going on at the time and really trying to tap into that. And I feel like, you know, I have earned where I am, and I'm really appreciate that people have seen it now and are noticing it.
All right, Cassidy Hubbarth is, of course, an on-air host and reporter for ESPN. You see her on NBA coverage, both hosting and on the sidelines, as she mentioned, college football, where you see her. I mean, the big thing for her is the ABC cut-ins and the post-game, which, you know, depending on what that game of the day is.
Week one? What are we talking about? Florida State, Alabama?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we're going to be talking 10 million plus. Yes. I mean, that's a huge audience. Listen, yeah, you've traveled so far for this, at least a couple miles. And we appreciate you coming into the studio in all honesty. You did not have to do that, but I appreciate it. You've also made, we'll go inside baseball here, PR person Ben Cafardo incredibly happy.
Yes.
See, he has been pitching you since like 1936,
no,
basically.
No, but here's the thing, though. And that, when
he's
I
a big supporter of yours. He believes in you.
And that's why I'm telling you, it's the first time I feel appreciated because of people Cafardo, like
Ben. To be very honest with you, Cafardo...
For a long time.
Yeah, before you had done anything with like significant like pop,
right.
he was always pitching you.
And,
so.
No, and
he's legit.
To be able to... And you're talking about...
Pains me to say something nice about him, but it is honestly true.
Right, but you talk... he's an amazing guy. Actually, I could see him being a producer one day because he's so knowledgeable.
For a PR person, he does keep it real, which I appreciate.
But like you asked about a roadmap to ESPN, like it's about people like him who can help me figure out
that
place.
Yeah.
I mean, I there's so many people behind the scenes that have helped me. You know, I don't know. Did you ever hear the name Anthony Mormile?
Yes.
Yeah, he passed away. A couple. He was my first mentor down in digital.
Wow.
He was one of the people. He was Molly Kiram.
Was a big ESPN digital guy.
Correct.
And then went to CBS.
He was a big supporter of Molly Kiram, Jenny Dell, John Anik, Paul Severino, those people I was telling you about.
Wow.
That started in digital. And then a woman named Maureen Hassett Lindsay, who was, you know, I don't know if you know her, but
I know that name somewhere.
She was a CP at ESPN before she worked at the NBA, and she unfortunately was part of one of the big rounds of layoffs. But she was a huge advocate to me, helped me figure out who the heck I should be meeting with, because the biggest problem is figuring out in ESPN who's in charge of what.
Right. And it can change.
It changes constantly. So just finding those like people who I could just go to and be like, can you help me figure that out? And that's what the first 6 years was for me, is just figuring out who to talk to. Unfortunately, now I have, you know, a advocate in, you know, Ben and Tim Corgan and Connor Schell, and that as much as the roles, I feel, you know.
Right. It's impressive name dropping by you.
Thank
as
you.
Well.
You're welcome,
listen,
guys.
Cassidy, I had such a clean exit. And,
sorry,
and we,
I, you know what?
Because
I wanted to, you know, name drop people. So
you've taken it too far. All right, listen, it's in all seriousness. We appreciate it. Check out Cassidy, of course, on Twitter. Basketball Twitter knows her. And
yeah, don't do what Richard does and doesn't follow me on it either.
We will be watching you during the upcoming NBA season. In all seriousness, thank you very much for being part of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. All right, let's take a break for a second and talk about Barbasol. The biggest thing to happen to Barbasol since shaving cream is also the only thing to happen to Barbasol since shaving cream. Barbasol is introducing the new Barbasol razors. It is the brand America trusts for a close, comfortable shave, and there are now premium disposable razors. Barbasol's close shave technology on every razor means you get an advanced pivoting head and ultra-thin open flow blades. The Ultra 6 Plus razor also has a 7th blade, and that is specifically designed to refine and style tricky areas like under your nose, sideburns, and beards. Most men know the issues when it comes to that, women as well. Visit Barbasol.com and get a $2 savings coupon and see for yourself why Barbasol razors are the number one new disposable razors out there. You're looking good, America. You're shaving with Barbasol. All right, my thanks again to Cassidy Hubbarth for coming into our studio. Very cool of her to do that. And now let's head out to our Sports Illustrated Media Roundtable discussion with Jimmy Trina of Sports Illustrated and Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad and Jimmy, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Sure.
Everyone who listens to this will likely know, or maybe not everyone, so I'll just sort of frame it. Robert Lee is a announcer for ESPN3. His real sort of main job is he's the television play-by-play voice and the radio play-by-play voice for Siena College. That's a Division I men's basketball program in upstate New York. He found himself at the center of a major sports controversy on perceived political correctness run amok. The background is in what ESPN says was a joint decision between Robert Lee and ESPN. Robert Lee was removed from broadcasting Virginia's season-opening football game on September 2nd against William & Mary because of the similarity of his name to the Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Robert Lee, the broadcaster, was reassigned to call Youngstown State at Pittsburgh on ESPN3 that same day. Story has just blown up. Started with Clay Travis of Outkick the Coverage first reporting it. From there, it went all over conservative media, and then all throughout the mainstream media. Obviously, the big note here is whether ESPN is the one who directed Robert Lee to change his assignment. They claim vociferously that it was a decision made between Robert Lee and the company, and that Robert Lee was more comfortable not doing the assignment because of the potential mockery that could come from doing the game. We'll start to get into it now. Jimmy, just short of your top line thoughts on what is both a media story as well as a story that's gone far beyond sports media.
Well, I find this story, I found it all day highly, highly disturbing, because maybe it's a product of the time we live in. I don't know if it's social media. I don't know if it's the deranged president we have, but people just have no interest in finding the truth or getting the facts. So many people right now think that ESPN announced this decision to pull Robert Lee from the game. Not true. It was broken on a competitive website, and then they had to respond. There are these people who think they did this for politics and for a liberal agenda. I'm not sure how switching a guy off a game is a liberal agenda, but that's it. So I think the biggest problem ESPN has right now is that the narrative's been set. They can't do anything to change it, and people have these completely whacked out theories of what took place, and it's not even close to remotely close to what did take place. Obviously, they figured, save this guy from a day of hell on social media. Okay. Yeah, probably a stupid thing to worry about in this day and age. I mean, if you're a public figure, a broadcaster, a writer, whatever, a rough 24 hours, 48 hours on social media should be the hardest thing you deal with in life. I mean, it comes with the territory. So, yeah, maybe the guy would have got mocked for a day. I guess maybe they're worried about insensitivity because they did make this decision, I guess, when Charlottesville was going on. So I sort of give them a pass on the poor decision, overreaction. I don't think it was this evil plot. I think they were just trying to avoid social media, flack and mockery. And now, of course, it's come back to bite them in the butt, and it's much worse than it probably would have been.
It's a good take. Chad, I'm not sure if you've been reporting this. I have today, earlier than we're taping this. But so it's sort of twofold again. I'd be interested in your top line sort of take on this and whether you have spoken to any of the people involved in the story.
Just the ESPN side. I'm writing about it for Friday. I would like to hear from Robert. Is it Robert M. Lee? Is that his middle initial?
It's Robert. I'll look it up as we're talking. It's Robert. I know it's Robert Lee. I don't know what his middle initial is at the moment, but keep going.
I think we need to hear from him.
Absolutely.
Because there's still some vagueness in the story and the statements that ESPN has given regarding who actually wanted this first and how much pushing was required on one end or the other to get the decision be made. You read the statements and I've got one from ESPN. I'm sure you guys do too. I've read both what you both written. I get the sense that they pushed him to do this and he said, yeah, I guess, what the heck, it's probably a good idea. But there are also statements out there from ESPN. I think there was one Yashar Ali had where it says he wanted this. It kind of implies toward the end of the statement that Robert Lee wanted this. I think I feel bad for the guy because I think what happened here is he probably put a lot of faith in ESPN PR to handle this and to make it the smallest possible story it could be by essentially being proactive and making it go away and making the switch before anybody knew about it. Instead, we know how this came out and how it ended up sort of a conservative touch point and another example, as Jimmy was saying, of how people interpret things how they want them to be interpreted rather than based on facts. And so this has become a touchstone for the perception that ESPN is too liberal, and here's another example of that. And the reality is they're trying to do the kid a favor, and now it's backfired into 100 times probably what it would have been if he had just called the game. So I don't think ESPN PR did him a lot of favors here. They probably should have just let him call the game.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, you've hit on, Chad, I think, the thing that that ultimately can give us some clarity, and that's to hear from Robert Lee. I've reached out to him. I have not heard back from him. I'm not sure I expect to ever hear from him, at least in the near term. I do hope, and I think it would be really good for him to sort of offer, whether on his Facebook page or a blog, sort of just how he saw things and what his take is. Now, he is a low-level broadcaster at ESPN. I mean, part of ESPN3, ACC Network. I mean, he's a freelance independent contractor, so he has no juice at ESPN, and I'm sure he does not want to inflame or bother ESPN. That said, Chad, it does strike me as, I think my reporting takes me to the belief that they were trying to do the right thing by the kid, but had no sense of if the story ever got out, how it would be played. And, you know, Jimmy, that gets back to what you said. And again, everybody could sort of be impacted by this, whether it's SI or the Boston Globe. Once a story is out there, and once people want to use that story for whatever their purposes are, it's over. You can't.
Yeah, and
you can't control it. Go ahead.
And I just, you know, I sort of disagree with you both in one sense, where you both want to hear from Robert Lee. I'm actually totally fine not hearing from Robert Lee. I mean, whether this came from Robert Lee or ESPN, I'm sure it was all of them together that ended up making the final decision. I'm not sure how hearing from him would change my opinion. I do think what the bigger story than Robert Lee is, for me personally, and I think it's something you guys as media writers and media reporters, I think, would get a lot of bang for your buck in figuring out is, I mean, I think I'd love to know what ESPN thinks about the fact that they have someone inside of their building in Bristol who went to a competitor and leaked this. To me, as someone who follows media stuff, I find that way more fascinating than anything Robert Lee would have to say.
Well, one thing, I'll get to you, Chad. I mean, listen, ESPN has people who leak, just like Fox and NBC have people that leak. It is interesting, and first of all, I know inside ESPN they're really pissed off.
There's a difference between leaking, you know, so-and-so is signing a four-year contract, or so-and-so just got laid off, where this person leaked this knowing that he was leaked, you know, that ESPN was not doing this from a evil, you know, point of view. They'd made a stupid overreaction, and now it's turned into what it's turned into, and it's all caused by someone from me. I mean, what this guy or girl, whoever did it, it was really, that's over the top.
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, Chad could tell you this, never underestimate that there are people within organizations that don't particularly like the organizations they work for, or they have their own beliefs as to why they think something happened. But Chad, I'm with you. We have to hear from this guy, because I think that provides the ultimate clarity in terms of how much was he dictating this decision, because it strikes me as it's hard for me to believe that Robert Lee was not somewhat part of this conversation, either dictating or an equal partner in terms of the assignment. Now, you can make it's easy to walk in someone else's shoes and say, man, you're just going to get like made fun of a little bit on social media, et cetera. But, you know, if you're at Virginia, you don't want to be the person who's sort of dealing with that on social media. You know, you're going to get mocked for having the name. There's going to be some knuckleheads out there that are mocking an Asian guy for having the name of Robert E. Lee. So all that sucks. At the same time, and I'm not trying to be Monday morning quarterbacking here, it is crazy that had everything just sort of happened. This is my take, Chad. Like, you would deal with like some knuckleheads on Twitter and like it would be over. I mean, it was not a very big important game that a ton of people were going to be paying attention to on the lead weekend of college football.
Yeah, I agree with that. And ESPN is not naive, so that's not the right word to use, but there's a severe miscalculation on the what if. What if this does get out? What if someone within our building leaks this out, or someone who saw the announcer's schedule ahead of time looks and makes the connection that we made the switch? What's the fallout then? Is there any fallout? Is there any backlash? Is it worse than what it would be if we just had the kid call the game? They made a mistake there, and I feel bad for him. I didn't know who he was before this. Now he's the guy, at least early in his career, and probably for quite a while, he's going to be associated with this. He's the guy ESPN pulled off that game because of his name, and it's going to stick to him, and that kind of stinks. The other thing is, I read Will Leach's piece for Sports on Earth, and he said he didn't even think having, you know, being the founder of Deadspin and someone who set the early narrative there, he didn't think this would have even been a post, that if Robert Lee had called that game, that nobody would have written it up. That's absolutely false. I like Will a lot, but I think that would have been on Deadspin pretty quickly. It would have been on Awful Announcing maybe even quicker. And it's something that would have had, you know, when Deadspin launched, Twitter wasn't nearly what it is now. Social media wasn't what it is now. It would have been something that was really prominent on Twitter once somebody made the connection there. So I feel bad.
I totally disagree with that. But if that's your take, then ESPN is justified in what they did then, no?
Meaning what?
Well, you believe that would have been a big point of mockery that day.
Oh, not a big one, but it would have been out there. Will said, and I hope I'm not misremembering this to borrow from Roger Clemens, but I think what he wrote was it probably wouldn't even been a post. And it would have been. It would have been out there. It would have been something that blew over and it blew away in a day that maybe ended up on a few memes. You got a laugh out of it, and then you moved on to the next day's joke. Whereas now, you know, it, because of the way they handled it and because it got out, it's incredibly magnified over what it would have been. But I absolutely believe it would have been out there.
Yeah, I think it would have been a post too.
I totally don't.
Jimmy, I'm not gonna say it's a guaranteed post at Deadspin or Awful Announcing someplace else. I think somebody would have mentioned it, though. I mean, even locally,
I mean,
it would have been picked up.
I mean, okay, so the post, like, I think Will said it best. What is the post going to be? ESPN had a guy named Robert Lee.
That's it. Yeah. I'm with you, Jimmy. I'm
exactly
with you in the
that.
Sense that I don't think it would have been any kind of firestorm. I do think, though,
right,
somebody would have mentioned it. I think, and again, you'd have to get into the executive's decision, how close this was to Charlottesville. There's, you know, tensions and sort of and anxieties running high. I think somebody would have mentioned him, but this would not have been front page news on any site, which, again, I think gets back to what Chad and I are talking about. You have to hear from Robert Lee to kind of get some kind of insight and clarity into how he felt about it. Chad, I just want to correct just one thing. It's kind of a small thing. Robert Lee is young in his broadcasting career in terms of the heights he has reached in terms of nationally. Mm-hmm. He's not particularly young in terms of a broadcaster. I made this mistake yesterday myself. He's probably close to 40 years old. But again, you are right, Chad, in the fact that he's been the voice of Siena for a long time. He's done a lot of stuff in the capital region of New York, so he's not been a national guy. And now he has to sort of get tagged with being the guy who ESPN removed from this game. What really sucks, though, is, and again, I think it's an example of that, all this could happen to any of us. And Jimmy, I'll just go back to you. Once sites decide to sort of use you as a certain narrative or story, it's over.
Yeah.
You know, and we saw this yesterday a lot, whether it's Tucker Carlson or some other conservative outlets. I mean, there's a discussion to be had on whether something is too over-the-top PC. But we still do not know the specific facts of what Robert Lee asked or did not ask for. And
well, I don't think
that's a big missing element if you're going to go run to town on ESPN as this left-leaning organization that took this guy off the air because they didn't want a guy with the same name as the statues in Virginia.
Right. Well, there's a couple of things. I personally don't think this is going to have any – effect or impact whatsoever on Robert Lee's career, because the people who basically, you know, smell blood in the water, are they're after ESPN. They're not after Robert Lee.
Right. Agreed.
People have this, you know, I don't want to, you know, sully your classy podcast, but they have this raging hard on for ESPN having a liberal bias, and they don't care about Robert Lee. They care about knocking ESPN whenever they can, however they can. So I think Robert Lee will be fine in all of this. I actually think he comes across as a sympathetic figure in all this. He's sort of getting hit by shrapnel, it seems like.
Interesting.
It's ESPN that conservatives are apoplectic about right
Definitely.
Now.
Right.
And they're going to use anything. If it wasn't this, it would be something else. And
Kaepernick and some other places.
Yeah, yeah. Conservatives have made ESPN one of their number one enemies. So whether it's Robert Lee or something, they will find something, and they will, because I know from my Twitter feed today, every time someone sort of gave me a counter argument to this about, oh, they're catering to liberals or they're trying to be PC, I would respond with, well, how is moving a broadcaster off of a game liberal? And then they're like, well, ESPN is liberal. Okay, well, I don't know what to counter with that. I mean, so I do think we're blowing this way out of proportion in terms of this specific story and Robert Lee, because I think that'll go away. But I think the story of conservatives versus ESPN is here to stay for a very long time.
Chad, before you answer,
news.
Chad, before you answer Jimmy's question, let me ask you this. How come the Jason Whitlocks of the world, they're always going after me and not you, Chad Finn? What is it about me that just bothers them as opposed to you? Why
you're
can't
annoying.
You? Is that what it is? It's my own personality.
Yeah, have you seen your Twitter feed? It's annoying.
That's what you're saying. All right, Jimmy, you've cleared things up immeasurably. Chad, if
your
you
personality,
are.
Personality, how you look.
It is, yeah. It's all that. All right, well, yeah. You know, ask a question, get an answer.
Plus, you have a lot of Twitter followers, so you know that. You got to go after whoever has a lot of Twitter followers so you can get attention and siphon some of them off.
I'm mocking myself there. Chad, if you are ESPN at this point, is there anything you do other than just to wait out the news cycle involving the story? I said this, and I was sort of not necessarily being tongue-in-cheek. I don't think ESPN would ever do that. And first of all, ESPN would never do this.
Yeah.
It would be ballsy, but could you imagine if they then decided, like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to reassign him to the game. We're going to, like, have fun with this, and we're going to let Robert Lee head to the Robert E. Lee place in Virginia and do the game. They would never do that, but I feel like that would be a way to win the day after all this. But you know, it gets back to the larger question: what do you think ESPN does here? Do you think they just basically they play it out, they take some more news cycles, and people move on?
You know, if they did do it that way, the sites that are burying them right now would consider it a victory, though, that they bullied them or pushed them back to doing the right thing, which is, in their mind, putting him back on the game. You know, ESPN, we stopped gutless ESPN from doing the wrong thing would be the headline, whatever site you're talking about. But, yeah, I think they just let it blow over. There's really – it feels like anything they do probably would just add another spark to the whole thing, and it'll go away when something else dumb happens tomorrow or the next day and becomes the – ridiculous media story of the day. So I think that's probably the proper approach, is just to let it play out. But you know, it's probably what they should have done in the first place, is just let the guy call the game and move on to the next day.
Jimmy, is there any?
It's not like he was going to call Alabama, Michigan. It is a Virginia, William and Mary game.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy, I this podcast on this one is a little Monday morning quarterback, and I think everybody here would admit that it's sort of easy for us to sort of comment after the fact, but. Jimmy, do you, I don't know how to sort of phrase this. Do you buy in at all to like the idea that maybe places like, I mean, Fox is pretty good at this. They don't really care how people write or perceive them in the public space. If there's any kind of lesson, and you work there, so you obviously would know, but for ESPN, is there any kind of lesson that maybe at least you take away from this one? Like maybe just like not worry as much about what you perceive is going to be the reaction and just sort of live with what your decisions are? Or
listen, I mean, I think that, like you said, it's Monday morning quarterback. I think that's a very easy thing to say, but I'm going to give these people the benefit of the doubt on this one, only because, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't they make this decision and come about discussing all this right after Charlottesville happened? I mean, it wasn't like they did decided this yesterday.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. It was closer to the tragedy in Charlottesville than being made. We're taping this on a Wednesday than being made on the Tuesday. This all blew up.
Right. So again, a complete overreaction, a very silly decision, but I don't want to kill them for it because something like what happened that weekend was just, if people remember, it wasn't that long ago. It was a very crazy couple of days there. So I could see where they got caught up in it. I think, they got caught up in that moment. I think the lesson overall should be all of us, the three of us on the phone, SI, Boston Globe, everyone needs to just relax with responding to what's on Twitter. We get way carried away with it.
True.
But again, I'm looking at it like they made this decision, 1, 2, 3 days after Charlottesville happened. It was a very ugly situation. They messed up. It's okay. We'll all live. It's Virginia, William & Mary. Robert Lee will be fine. We can all move on to more important matters.
You're saying Robert E. Lee will be okay or Robert Lee will be okay? Which one?
Robert Lee. Right. Robert Lee.
Because the other one is long gone.
Yeah. I also think, and not for nothing, I mean, this is a stupid point, but ESPN also got screwed because this ended up breaking after Kyrie got traded. If they could have only reversed the times on that, this could have been buried a little bit more.
That's true. Chad, listen, Kyrie in your neck of the woods, a huge story. I assume that's still carrying the day over Robert Lee. I hope so.
Yeah, for some reason, some idiots up here are burning Isaiah Thomas jerseys.
What?
Apparently believing he's the one who pulled off the trade. So,
that makes sense.
NBA, but
that makes
ready
no
for
sense.
The NBA season. It does. Makes all sense.
All right, we'll end with this, and I'll let you guys do one last takeaway. But I now am, I don't know, whatever. I'm sure Fox Sports 1 person can complain at me for this, but I'm kind of now rooting for Robert Lee. Like, I feel like this sucks so bad. I want him to, get like a major game and just like kick ass and hit it out of the park. I don't know if that's going to happen, but you really can. This is where Jimmy hit on. You really can have, even if he dictated this, you can have sympathy when you are basically sort of an unknown guy. And again, he's a public figure because he's a broadcaster, but really unknown in the space where you become front page news on Breitbart or the lead on Fox News or not the lead, but a story on Fox News. And I don't know, Jimmy, I hope the guy does something or gets a really cool assignment because this Chad is right. Like, he's going to be remembered for a long time now as the guy who was involved in the Robert E. Lee Virginia thing.
I don't know. Like I said, I think it's going to pass for him. I really do. I really think this is more about
that'd be great
the conservative war against the so-called liberal ESPN. I really think that's. I think Robert Lee is a minor player in all this. Actually,
all right. Well, that's. I'm rooting for that, Jimmy. I hope that take is correct. Chad, You want to add anything to end this? There are obviously a million other sports media topics, but we're only gonna focus on this one today because there's a lot more to do on this podcast, Chad.
I'm just thinking about what Jimmy said earlier, which is wouldn't you just love to know who leaked this out, who got this out to Clay Travis? Because the perception that ESPN is liberal, I guess, is one that sticks, but there's quite a few conservative people that work there too, and some with particular prominence, Sage Steele being one. So, I would like to know who the person is that got this out and what their political bent is. I'm sure we will never know, but it's a fascinating element to this story and why it blew up to the level that it did.
Yeah, I don't think we will find that out.
And what is going on in Bristol? I mean, are they like calling people into like the human resources office one by one today to quiz them to see who's the? I mean, they need to find out who the leaker is. Yeah, I mean, I know if that happened here, I mean, it would be, Richard. I mean, if that happened here, we would be. I could see us just not resting until we tried to figure out who it was.
The irony of that is,
there would be a suspect list.
Yeah, at both the Boston Globe and Sports Illustrated, no one would care as much if it was about us compared to ESPN. So let's be honest, that's one. But two, Jimmy, I know that if this if Sports Illustrated, I don't even know how it's not really a parallel, but if we were in that position, I agree. By the way, I don't think an SI investigation you would find the person, and I don't think you're ever going to find the person at ESPN. Chad and I can definitely talk about this. They have a gigantic amount of people who work there.
Right.
Reporters who cover that place interact with people far more than management and PR does, or at least sort of on the same level. And I don't know how you could find it unless unless somebody really sort of just, you know, left their tracks crazy. But I agree with you. That's a very, and I'm not saying it wasn't a story, but it's very, very fascinating as to who at ESPN, if it was an ESPN source, dropped that, because they set off a major firestorm that has ESPN now scrambling a little bit. All right, Jimmy Traina, you can catch his stuff on Traina Thoughts every day on SI.com. Catch the Jimmy Traina podcast when it comes out as well. Roman Reigns among Seth Rollins among his guests on that podcast. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, you can catch his sports media work. Is it three times a week, Chad? Twice a week?
It's on Fridays, and the actual sports stuff's three times a week.
Okay, three times a week for Chad in Boston Globe and Boston.com, and then the sports media column on Friday. We'll do this again. I think you guys are a good team in terms of providing different takes on all this stuff. So hopefully you guys will come back to the Sports Illustrated podcast over the next couple of weeks when we do a longer roundtable. Thank you very much,
Jim. I don't like the one-topic thing. It doesn't give me enough opportunities to make fun of you about things.
You know, I understand that. But, you know, we have another guest on this one. So you'll be back within the next 3 to 4 weeks, and we'll go longer. I promise.
Oh, and why don't tell everyone who the guest is.
Cassidy Hubbarth is the guest.
Right, and when you asked me to do a mock draft of broadcasters a couple months ago, I picked her, and then you mocked me and said my team was terrible, and now you're having her on your podcast. So basically, I was ahead of my time, and you were wrong.
Well, I don't think I was knocking Cassidy. I was just saying, I thought, if I remember correctly, wasn't I saying that might have been a little high pick for her? I think that was the... That was that.
And now she's on the world famous Richard Deitch sports media podcast.
Well, she had an excellent year in the NBA. All right, well, Jimmy, once again, your drafting skills when it comes to mock broadcasting drafts is phenomenal. Chad, is there anything you want to promote, you know, for yourself? Have you been part of any drafts?
No, I think Jimmy got good value there, though. I respect Jimmy's drafting prowess.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Chad, are the Sox going to hang on for a playoff spot?
They're going to hang on, but everybody hates the manager up here. So they're counting down the days till October when he blows a game by mismanaging the bullpen, game seven against the Indians or something.
Yeah, it's an amazing sports town, but also just
Will they care about that once the Patriots start?
No, I mean, you see the ratings for the preseason games against the Red Sox, Yankees ratings, and they're basically 70% higher. So
that's crazy. Yeah.
It is, and it's standard, too. That's the way it is now. So, yeah, once the Patriots are in regular Patriots mode, it's Sox are the second-class citizens.
Yeah, well, this podcast is like Boston sports media. I love it. Fantastic. Shout-out to Greg Bedard. We hope he does well. All right, thank you to Chad Finn and Jimmy Traina for joining us on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. All right, back in the studio, my thanks to guest Cassidy Hubbarth, as well as Chad Finn of the Boston Globe and Jimmy Traina. Thank you to Lou Pellegrino. Previous podcasts on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, Mitch Album of the Detroit Free Press. We did a long podcast. I hope you listened to that on Mitch Album writing about the death of his 7-year-old daughter. It was a pretty emotional podcast to be part of, and I hope people check that out. Tim Kawakami of the Athletic Bay Area, and Matt Yaloff of the MLB Network, and then Tom Rinaldi, Iron Eagle, were previous podcasts as well in July and August. We'll have some good guests coming up as well. So please go back on Apple Podcasts, check those podcasts out, give us a review if you like it. That's how the podcasts continue. All right, again, my thanks to Lou Pellegrino. Thanks to everybody at Sports Illustrated. We'll see you next time on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.